little hesitantly, sat down on the wooden bench, and placed my hands on the well-scratched surface. The Tremelorn? No, not right now. Design mode almost consumed my mind, turning the surrounding environment into an illuminated room, but I did my best to concentrate. Barleona is a very interesting game. If players are allowed to unlock a skeleton design mode without completing 100 quests, then it stands to reason that you could use it whenever you felt like it, even despite the newly unlocked functionality. I simply need to imagine that I'm surrounded by darkness. They couldn't have cut it off completely. But at some point, instead of the dark design mode, the lover's pendant appeared before my eyes. As I understood it, my subconscious was feeling guilty, reminding me in this manner about the letter that Mr. Krestowski had sent me with a list of the 50 couples who were first in line to receive their pendants. He'd already arranged with them what they'd do for my clan. The only thing that everyone was now waiting for was the actual item. Only a single diamond fit in my mail. Serart offered to take the rest into the clan storage vaults. Indeed, my CFO had several times reminded me in the letter that the order had to be filled urgently. What I liked most of all was that I hadn't received a single call on my amulet. Serart understood perfectly well that if I didn't feel like doing anything at the moment, then forcing me would be pointless, and so he treated me very specifically. His was a considerate approach. Using the advantages of the new design mode, I opened the mailbox and projected the letter with its list of 50 pairs. The first group. The player couples who'd decided to grow so close to one another that they were prepared to work for my clan to do so. 50 pairs. That's like 150 minutes of office work. Damn it. That's too long. That's really too long. I opened my mailbox once again, messed around with the settings of the mail daemon, and a long list of 87,000 lines appeared, and vanished in the distance, before my eyes. The complete list of everyone who wanted a pendant. The enormity of my predicament stunned me. The first lot was but a drop in the ocean in comparison to the main torrent. I had to do something. But what? Creating the pendant was an entirely standard process. I activate the recipe, create a projection of the diamond, the system processes the stone on its own, breaks it in 2 halves, polishes it, and generates a window with 2 entry fields for the lovers' names. Once I enter the names, the pendants are bound to the players. Then this virtual projection is combined with a real diamond, and the pendants are complete. There's no tricks or difficulties here. A rote and lengthy process of forming the binding that takes up 3 minutes. And the entire time, the jeweler is little more than a spectator. The system really does everything on its own. It just takes forever to do it. Sighing and trying to calm down, I decided to brainstorm the various ways I could solve this problem. The simple solution was to expedite the binding process. For that, I'd need Merlin's potion, which I didn't know how to come by. What else could be done? Start one process and somehow move on to the next one while it's running, in parallel. The interesting question is how to do this, or is it even possible? I need to ask Favaz. I think that's about it. There's nothing else that could be thought of. The sequence of creating the pendant was simply too regimented and... Hold on. Regimented. My heart skipped a beat with anxiety when I swiped aside all the projections that remained before my eyes, trying to bring my idea to fruition as quickly as possible. Who said that I first had to form the stones and then apply the images to them? Why not try to do everything in reverse? For instance, form a huge pool of virtual names and then apply the image of the stone to it. I have no idea how to do this, but I liked the idea. I had to try it. Complications popped up right off the bat. The first question that I hadn't an answer to was how to visualize the name. It's a simple name, with no attributes regarding gender, class, appearance, race, a name that is associated with a player only due to the fact that it's always hanging over their character's head. How could I make the system understand that this player was closely entwined with another one, of whom I knew nothing but his or her name, even if that was a unique one in Barleona? And Barleona as a whole? Was there a chance that the names were only unique as far as the continent went? A good question. I'd need to work it through carefully. But something else was important at the moment. How? Maybe I'm posing the wrong question. Maybe instead of asking how, I need to be asking why. Why do people decide to be together? Why are people prepared to spend a week of their time in-game to be able to communicate with another person more intimately? Love? A pretty answer, perhaps even the correct one, but one that bore no relation to an item. For some people, love is being constantly beside each other. For others, it's a minute-long meeting once a week or a fleeting glance of two passers-by on the street who may never speak with one another. Or even some common activity, common thoughts, common interests. The individuals who want the pendant are incredibly different, and it's impossible to come up with some universal principle that ties each one with the concept of love. In that case, we'll return to the original question. Is love really the matter here? Is it simply for love that the players want to be able to communicate telepathically? The chance to be closer to one another? The option of using a channel of communication that remains closed to everyone around them? The desire to share not only words, but also emotions with the other person? Despite the fact that I was surrounded by design mode and Barleona, shivers ran along my body. Physiologically speaking, a game avatar doesn't have something like shivers, and yet no one had removed the nervous system of the real person. I suddenly realized what unites those who wanted the amulet. My first thought had been accurate. It was love after all. But that was also the tip of the iceberg. If I hadn't had Anastaria, it would have been really difficult to reach this conclusion. The first batch of 50 orders was sent to the trash can. The bright glow of design mode no longer bothered me. I didn't pay it any attention. If I was going to work, I'd work with the full list and nothing but the full list. What's the difference whether one couple needs a pendant or 87,000 couples? In its current formulation, the number of pendants played absolutely no role. What mattered was something else. Unity. We'll take that as an axiom, that two people love each other. What does this mean? The manifestations of love, as I already understood, could be diverse. Even though Stacy loved me, before the cataclysm, she did absolutely terrible things to me. But that was still love, as odd as that may seem. Why did she do this? Because she simply likes masochism? Yeah, right. She did everything in order to protect me from an external threat. And she did it the best way she knew. But she did it. The question that follows is, why? But I already have an answer to it. Because a person in love doesn't feel whole without the other half. The very expression, second half, suggests that only together does the new, single whole form. It's referred to differently, a couple, a family, partners, but the gist of it doesn't change. At a certain point in time, people who love each other feel like a single whole. Why at a certain point in time? Because you can't ignore the possibility that people might fall in love with someone else. Anything is possible, but this has no effect on the creative process. I need to split the diamond into its parts, polish them, and combine them with the names. This approach could work too, but it's not the right way to do it. I need to learn how to work with the names. I need to take any two names. As if reading my thoughts, the names of a couple appeared before me, and create a single union from them. Intertwine them in such a manner that only the high priestess could untangle them, and with her might tear the bonds between the players. They want to be together? Let them be together, then. Without understanding myself how I did it, I associated Rosgard the Annoying with my right hand and Ciri the Defender with my left. I brought my palms together and intertwined my fingers, locking them. Forever and anon, I declare you a couple. The two names before my eyes clashed together, mixed, forming an indescribable mixture of letters and colors, and formed a shining sphere. The pendant for one couple was ready. Looking up at the list before me, I already knew what to do. Associate with the right, then with the left, form the lock, the mixture, the shining sphere, and... Man! Favaz's hysterical shriek reached me even within design mode. How much more of this? I guess I'd done something terrible. But I couldn't look at what had happened, because the paralysis debuff blocked this for the next 48 hours. At the same time, I realized that I was lying on something cold and terribly uneven, as if someone had piled a bunch of stones on the ground and then dumped me onto them.
Shaman Mayan, you are under arrest for destroying the jeweler's workshop and sending 52 free citizens to the Greylands.
The gnome's shrill outburst was joined by the menacing growl of the Anhur's city guard. Stacy, I need help, I managed to think, as the cold iron collar clapped around my neck. They were about to escort me to jail in chains. The guards got me. They're taking me away. Barleona Jail is a fun place. On the one hand, I didn't see a thing beyond the darkness. The paralysis debuff kept me blind. On the other hand, I'd been in here before as a hunter, so I could imagine my surroundings just fine. Stone walls that blocked not only all chat communication and mage summons, but even my telepathic link to Anastaria. A small window with a rusty grate that could somehow stand up to a battering ram. A wooden door that separated the player from the outside world. Everything as usual, in other words. And I was even grateful that the debuff kept me from beholding this dour place. No matter how hard I tried to bring it up, design mode didn't work in jail. All I could do was sit there and wait for Stacy. If she paid my bail in a half hour, I'd leave the jail, exit the game, and go dig around the forums to find out what the hell was going on.
"Come on out, man."
20 minutes later, the door slid aside. The guard regarded me grimly, scanned me up and down, and added, with barely disguised contempt,
"You've made bail this time around, you murderer. Be grateful that our empire has such lenient laws."
The 2 points of attractiveness I had with this fellow suggested that the guard could barely keep himself from sending me to the Greylands. What did I do to him? Had I killed an NPC with my accident? That couldn't be the case. They'd never let me go to begin with. Anyone who killed an NPC within city limits was punished with the full weight of the law. All of Barleona was built on this principle. Although, what killing? The rules forbade it.
"Criminal,"
growled the guard, delivering me to the jail warden. Right then, my vision returned to me. The system informed me that Anastaria had dispelled my debuff. I found myself in a small office with a grizzled NPC behind the desk. His black mustache appeared like a target against a white background. Stacy was standing a bit to the side, watching me with a wry expression. I knew this smirk. It didn't bode anything good for me. It looked like I really had managed to cause some trouble.
"How many times do I have to tell you, Sergeant?" said the NPC warden wearily. "Criminals stay in their cells. As soon as a sentient is set free, he or she ceases to be a criminal. You're dismissed." "Shaman Mayan," the old man began as soon as the guard had left the room, "in the name of the Empire, I hereby offer my apologies for your detainment. We had no right to take you under guard. The Herald and Anastaria already explained everything to us. You may go now."
"I don't understand a thing," I muttered in surprise. "Why did you detain me, then?"
"You, my darling, managed to destroy the workshop. Again," Stacy explained.
"I destroyed it last time, but there wasn't a punishment."
"Last time, you didn't destroy 52 free citizens along with it."
"But killing other players is blocked. I couldn't do anything physically. Barleona should have barred me from harming them."
"And yet, you did it anyway. You have a PK marker on you. Or, at least, you had it when you entered the office. But there's no penalty, as such, for your murders. It seems the Emperor himself didn't understand how you managed to do it. They wanted to imprison you for something else."
"For destroying 2 squads of the Anhurst City Guard," the warden spoke up, entering our conversation. "By your hand, 12 worthy warriors were sent to the Greylands, and only half of them bore the marks of death. 6 recruits hadn't yet earned their marks, and now never will. This is what we wanted to punish you for."
2 squads? I whispered, surprised. "But how?"
"One of the recruits was the brother of my sergeant," the warden went on, ignoring my question. "They grew up fatherless, and their mother asked the older brother to look after the younger one. He was recruited into the Anhurst City Guard, one of the safest possible stations to serve, and yet Shaman Mayan showed up and proved the opposite. You should be proud. Your name has entered the annals of Anhurst City history.
Stacy, what's going on? What's with the guilt trip? I think everyone's just in shock. No player has ever managed to kill a guard before. Typically, they collapse to the ground with one HP, but in your case, as always, the typical outcome didn't happen. Send me your logs. I want to see what you were up to.
Could I help in some way? I asked the jail warden carefully, sending Stacy the logs of my pendant crafting. The next time I begin combining them with the gems, I should first go somewhere far outside of any populated area.
With what? His widow shall receive gold. She'll never know hardship again, but that won't bring back her son. You, the free citizens, only know how to do one thing. Kill. Those who bear the mark of death cannot understand the grief of a mother who has lost her son.
Stacy, here's a global question for you that stuns me with its novelty. Is there a heaven or hell in Barleona? A place where dead NPCs go? The Greylands are only for the players, aren't they?
Every god has a different setup. This guard was probably a follower of Iluna, so after dying he should enter Erebus. It's a place of non-being, where the souls mix and dissolve into one another, ceasing to be individual entities.
Is the transition instant? Do the souls immediately dissolve, or does it happen over a period of time?
Please don't tell me that you're thinking of going after the guards, Dan. It's not possible.
An amazing woman once told me, there are no impossible things. There are only the fetters of your consciousness that forbid you from doing what you wish to do.
I never said anything of the kind.
Who said anything about you? I was talking about my mother.
When are we going to attempt the tomb?
We're starting tomorrow.
So I have an entire day.
Excellent!
I sighed deeply, gathering my strength, and then blurted out, "The death of your sergeant's younger brother is my fault. I won't ask for forgiveness. I won't act like nothing happened, and I won't promise the impossible. I can only tell you one thing. I will do everything in my power to bring him and the other guards from Erebus. I give you my word as a shaman." Stacy shook her head as if deciding which mental clinic she had best check me into, but as she did so, the following notification appeared before me.
Quest available. Who will guard the guards themselves? Description: bring back the Anhurst guards from Erebus. Time limit for completing the quest, 24 hours. Quest type: I knew you'd choose this option, James. Reward, penalty, variable.
Chapter 3. Erebus.
"Mayan and Anastaria,"
Elizabeth said in a surprisingly cold voice as soon as we appeared before her. The completed quest allowed us to avoid a long waiting line, and we were ushered directly into the office of the High Priestess of Iluna immediately.
"To what do I owe the honor of beholding the Harbinger and the Paladin General?"
"Reward received, plus 2,000 to reputation with the priests of Iluna, plus 1,000 to reputation with Goddess Iluna."
"Your Highness,"
Stacy and I said at the same time as soon as the reward notification appeared before us. We bowed at the same time, too, as if we'd been practicing all this for a long while, exchanged surprised glances, and burst out laughing.
I can see that the time you've been spending together has done you good," Elsa remarked in the same chilly tone of voice, ignoring our happiness. The astonishing thing was that I'd never encountered such a frosty attitude from Elizabeth before. I was really trying to stop laughing, but nothing was helping. The pressure of having been imprisoned earlier was now channeling into my laughing fit.
"High Priestess, we have come to see you on business."
Anastaria was the first to get a grip on herself and, sighing several times to dispel her laughing fit, addressed Elizabeth.
"We've completed the first part of your assignment and proved that our family is a strong one. So strong that you've interrupted your studies with my priestesses and ran off to pull Mayen out of jail?"
Elizabeth raised an eyebrow eloquently.
"A couple hours were so critical for you that you decided to disregard my gifts. Dan, we've got to get out of here immediately. My attractiveness with her has fallen to 50 points already. There's something off about her."
Anastaria's urgent thought flashed through my mind. "Elizabeth, it's my fault that..." I began, but the High Priestess cut me off.
"Of course it's yours. Who'd even argue that point?"
Elizabeth turned to face me. I noticed with astonishment that my 100 points of attractiveness with her, which I had always been quite proud of, had dwindled to 70. This was still a pretty hefty number for an average player, but for me, it was entirely unacceptable. My laughter quit me in a flash. What happened?
"What upsets me the most is the instability around you. If there are any problems, then there's always a high probability that Shaman Mayen is right in the middle of them."
"High Priestess," I continued stubbornly, despite Anastaria's best attempts to pull me out of the office, "we have lived through many trials, both good and bad. We've watched each other's backs and saved one another again and again. So please, explain to me what has caused your displeasure."
"Explain?"
An expression of false surprise appeared on the NPC's face.
"Why are you so suddenly interested in explanations, especially those of others and not your own? Isn't your motto, 'Onward and only onward, without ever looking back'?"
"It seems like you've confused me with someone," I parried. Anastaria failed to budge me from where I stood, so she muttered something but remained standing beside me. "During the duration of our acquaintance, I haven't once done anything without good reason. No one can accuse me of that."
"Oh, really? Literally 2 hours ago, a shaman sent 6 future guards to their eternal rest. They were young, inexperienced, untrained. Of course, this was done completely consciously and with full awareness of your impunity. Good work, Mayen. You barely even noticed it. And you're going to tell me that you can always justify your actions?"
"That's exactly why I'm here," I began to explain, but Elsa interrupted me again.
"You're betting on my kindness and understanding. You wish to escape your deserved punishment? That shall not be."
"Why, I couldn't give a damn about my punishment or who meets it out."
No one thought I knew how to yell, most of all myself. Elsa went quiet with a look of surprise on her face, allowing me to go on.
"I'm prepared to suffer any punishment right this instant. But before you make any decision, tell me how I can enter Erebus."
Elizabeth collapsed in her chair, as if her legs had failed her, and a deep silence descended on the office.
"You cannot bring back the dead, shaman."
Iluna's melancholy voice let me know that a new visitor had appeared in the priestess's office.
"Even a mourning mother, like Elizabeth here, cannot allow that to pass."
"What?" Stacy and I blurted out at the same time and began to turn our heads from Iluna to Elizabeth and back in stunned amazement. Elizabeth was the mourning mother? Something had happened with Clowder?
"Avton Dill hadn't yet received the mark of death,"
Iluna went on, as Elizabeth stared grimly at the empty sheet on her table.
"He was so eager to be of service to the Empire that he signed up to be an assistant guard. The explosion, which you accidentally caused, happened precisely as Avton Dill's squad was passing alongside the workshop. 6 dead. 6 young and inexperienced subjects of the Empire. And among their number, the son of my High Priestess. There is nothing I can do, Mayan. Just like you."
"I have 24 hours to bring them back," I said stubbornly. Iluna's authority in these matters weighed on me with the weight of a stone slab, forcing me to reject this venture, flee to some remote corner of Barleona, delete my shaman, and generally forget what a capsule even looked like. If the goddess says that it's impossible to bring back the dead, then there's no sense in getting myself into this. However, the quest entry in my quest list forced me to go against one of the most powerful creatures in Barleona and, clenching my fists, insist on my position. Clowder had to be returned to this world, and the quest suggested that he could be, too.
"Erebus is off limits to the living,"
Iluna went on. "Then I'll go there as a dead man." I refused to concede. "The longer you restrain me, the less time I have."
"Mayan, this is not possible."
Elizabeth tore her gaze from the empty sheet and looked up at me, her eyes brimming with tears. I could have killed those damn devs. Gazing into the eyes of a mother who had lost her child because of me, the sense of irreality evaporated. A sense of disgust I had never experienced before filled my inner being. I wanted one thing only, to help this woman regain her child. For me, Barleona had become real again, and the NPC with the codename High Priestess of Iluna became a mother who had lost her child. Not some bit of software code. "Elsa, this world has something called hope. As long as it exists, Clowder lives, as do the other 5 guards. Iluna, what must I do to enter Erebus?"
"You must die,"
the goddess said pithily after a short pause.
"You must die and forsake the Greylands. Be aware, Mayan, you might never return."
"In that case, consider me a Democrat," I managed to say, before my head exploded into a million tiny bits. Iluna had personally sent me to respawn.
"Loading. Please confirm that you wish to enter the Erebus location. Please read the rules."
I was forced to read a huge chunk of text, which would ordinarily have caused shivers to zip along my spine. It turns out that Erebus is one of the closed-off locations, and if I fail the quest here, my shaman might remain here for all eternity. That is, not for all eternity, but until the corporation permits his lost spirit to return to the game. Smiling to myself, I pushed the accept button that appeared only after I had read the entire text, and my surroundings snapped into motion. A fog formed around me, smoothly transforming into darkness several meters away. I got the impression that I had become a little lamp that was trying to scatter the dourness of this world, but lacking sufficient power to do so. I was sparkling and sputtering, but not very convincingly. Nevertheless, there was enough light to see the cobble-paved path receding ahead of me into the fog, and the precipice plummeting away into the same fog on either side of the path. My legs wavered beneath me, forcing me to squat. Who knows what the depth of this precipice is? It could be 2 meters, or it could be endless. The path before me was about 50 centimeters wide, so it wouldn't take much but a breeze to misstep and plummet into the depths. Forcing myself to get back up to my feet and take a first step turned out to be a fairly non-trivial challenge. My mind understood that I was surrounded by a game, but my wild fear of the unknown and the height fettered my movements, turned my legs to cotton, and forced me to lie down on the path to ensure I wouldn't fall. I had to struggle with myself for several minutes, even exiting to reality several times, to prove to my subconsciousness that the world around me was merely graphical. It seemed to help, and I managed to creep along the path. As I expected, my connection with the external world had been cut off. Neither the clan chat, nor mail, nor the amulets, nor my telepathy with Anastaria. Nothing at all. The only good news was that the quest timer before my eyes stopped every time I exited to reality. I had to complete this quest in 24 game hours, not real ones. This pleased me because it meant I would have time to talk to Anastaria when she yanked me out at the end of the day to tell her everything I'd seen. By the way, about the things I was seeing. Damn it! I can't record video here either.
Stranger!
All of a sudden, a drawn-out, malevolent whisper tore through the silence. It sounded like some giant snake had forgotten how to hiss and learned how to speak and scare the crap out of wandering shamans.
"What do you seek in the land of the dead?"
"Greetings," I yelled, just in case, noting the debuffs that blinked and instantly vanished, taking with them 10% of my HP. The voice didn't merely scare me, it also hurt me. "My name is Mayan, and I come in peace."
"You did not answer the question,"
whispered the unknown creature, after which I lost control of my character. My hands and feet began to contort themselves, their joints creaking from the strain. My hit points raced my energy to the bottom, and yet I remained watching this chaos of my shaman from the side, and suddenly realized that I wasn't feeling any pain. My character's sensory filter was set to maximum. If I had ventured into Erebus even a couple weeks ago, I'd be a ball of pain right now, tearing muscles and burning nerves without even a hint of consciousness. After all, I still recall the pleasure of cracking joints. But now?
"I have come for the 6 dead guards of Anhurs, who died several hours ago. Erebus is not their place."
In keeping with what was happening to my body, my voice emerged high-pitched and pierced with notes of panic and shock. Yet I succeeded in the main thing. The spasms stopped.
"Death for the dead, life for the living,"
whispered the voice at the level of a kitchen stoic who had spilled a pot of boiling water onto himself, leaving me on my own on the narrow path with 5% HP. "The shaman has three hands." I reflexively summoned a spirit of complete healing, forgetting entirely that all my unlearned summons had been blocked, and so wasn't particularly surprised when instead of the desired result, I beheld a notification. What drew my attention was that, even though the notification was completely ordinary, it was also illogical. "You may not summon spirits in Erebus." If I was prohibited from summoning spirits that I hadn't yet learned, then the system should probably first check whether I can summon a spirit at all, and only then evaluate the location I'm trying to do it in. After all, I could simply sing a song of the shaman mutant without even hinting at a summons. Why waste system resources tracking every word and checking whether it's a summons or not? It's dumb and unprofessional. Things like that are discouraged in the most introductory programming courses. The conclusion is evident. The restriction against summoning unlicensed spirits is superimposed, and in the main world it might be difficult to summon them, but it's possible. The important thing was to figure out how to do it. The good news was that health potions worked just as well in Erebus as anywhere else. Quaffing 4 bottles and making a mental note to replenish my glass stocks, which had been calculated for a level 160 player, I cautiously moved further along the path as the quest timer continued to creep mercilessly towards 0. The path seemed endless. I was no longer paying attention to the precipice at its edges, moving forward at a fairly brisk pace, when suddenly I came upon a fork. More precisely, a second path that joined mine at an acute angle and which boasted a lumbering, half-transparent orc with a sour mug. Wearing a burlap sack, the orc moved slowly, shuffling his feet unwillingly, as if something was prodding him onward. The paths evened out, allowing me a closer view of the orc. Not a single emotion, not a single look to the side. The face of the creature lumbering beside me displayed utter disinterest, mixed with weariness and submission to his fate. Judging by his muscles, the orc was a warrior, perhaps even a good one, but this hadn't saved him from Erebus. I guess he came across someone stronger. I couldn't help but touch the shoulder of the trudging creature. That is, I wanted to touch it, but my hand passed straight through the orc as if he was a projection, a ghost. At the same time, the ghost didn't react to my lack of tact and slowly continued to approach the point where our paths joined. I didn't exist, as far as he was concerned. Like hell! The system again glibly informed me that Erebus was no place for spirits. I was passing through the ghost like a supermodel passes through a crowd of geeks, meeting no resistance. The orc didn't react to a single gesture I made, neither to my hands waving in front of his face, nor my shouts, nor my expletives.
The imitator couldn't care less that I spun like a top through him, trying to scatter his form. He walked towards a goal only he knew, somewhere far ahead, reducing all my attempts to naught. Like hell squared! Design mode greeted me with its light and the happy recognition of upcoming work to be done. Finding the blessed visage of Iluna among my recipes, I combined it with an ingot of imperial steel, since I didn't have any marble in my bag or in my mail. My idea was as simple as a barley on a penny. Create an amulet of the junior novice and pin it to the ghost. I didn't see any other options for having a word with the orc. Insufficient resources to create the blessed visage of Iluna. Make sure that you have one unit of marble in your inventory bag. Here's where I really got angry. I don't have the resources? How am I supposed to craft if the corporation blocks any attempt of doing something out of the ordinary? Am I supposed to look for recipes for everything? Like hell cubed. I can't create a pendant because I don't have any marble, and, looking ahead, copper ingots. I can't create a new visage of Iluna out of, say, imperial steel, because I simply won't have time to do so. Yet I can do something else. I caught up with the ghost, who had managed to get ahead of me in the meantime, opened design mode again, and with a malevolent grin, created the projection of an orc. If they want to force me to work by the rules, then let it be so. I'll follow the rules. Only the rules will be mine. Using the Alter Essence ability, I inserted Iluna's visage into the orc's chest, thought a bit, opened my smithing recipes, found the most basic sword I had, added its projection to the orc's hand, since it does no good for a warrior to die without a sword, shut my eyes and imagined what this entire arrangement would look like in reality. Were I in the normal game world, these actions would have created a simple statue. Fragile and short-lived, since a sculptor wouldn't be involved in its creation. But Erebus should have its own laws.
No!
The savage plea of the creature tore the silence around us to shreds. I opened my eyes and beheld the embodied orc, on his knees with his eyes shut, bellowing like a herd of elephants. A light as bright as a supernova burst from within him, but it didn't blind me in the process, and I could see as the fog left the surrounding environment. Everything went cold inside of me. There were hundreds, no, thousands of paths here, all uniting and intertwining and headed towards an enormous cliff that loomed on the horizon. Animals, monsters, two-legged creatures, even fish, all trudged along the paths. An enormous army of those whose time in Barleona had reached its end, and who were now heading in the direction of their last stop, the point of complete rest. The lights went out, allowing the fog to flow back in, and with it, the orc stopped screaming. Falling from nowhere, the sword clattered upon the stones, but the orc snatched it up with a quick motion and stood up, turning in my direction.
"Free me, cur!"
he spat out with undisguised hate, and his hazel eyes began to fill with blood.
"The gods had mercy upon me and granted me a chance to have my revenge."
Before I could say anything, the orc lunged at me with his sword over his head, wishing to cleave me into two smaller, symmetrical shamans. On one hand, he was at level 120, and not particularly scary to me. On the other hand, his fierce demeanor alone was enough to cause trepidation.
"Damn it all! You're a ghost!"
the embodied orc spat when his sword passed through my arm, which I reflexively held out to protect myself. Wishing to make sure that I was a projection, the orc pushed me and then kicked me. But the result was the same. We were in two different planes of reality.
But at least we could talk.
"Who are you, anyway?" I asked what seemed like an obvious question, which, however, led to unexpected consequences.
"Talking ghost!"
The orc's terrible face cycled through a gamut of feelings, beginning with shock and ending with fear, after which he hopped high into the air, vanishing momentarily in the fog. Returning back to earth, the orc collapsed heavily onto the path and began to crawl away from me, scattering stones and with every moment getting closer to the edge.
"Stop crawling!"
I roared in a terrible voice, betting on the assumption that the orc was a soldier who was accustomed to following orders.
"Attend, hut! Ready! Front! At ease! Report! Who, what, where, and why? On the double!"
A notification that my charisma had gone up by several points flashed before me, but this didn't bring me much joy.
"What?" roared the orc, jumping to his feet. "No freemy cur shall order me around."
"Calm down, soldier." I held out my palms in supplication, turning off my officer mode. "No one's trying to give you orders. If you had gone on crawling, you would have fallen over the edge. Who are you, anyway?"
"The lies of a freemy cur shall find no audience in my soul."
Paying me no attention, the orc again tried to stab me with his sword, and again confirmed that we were ghosts to one another. "All right, do whatever you like." Once I realized that I wouldn't be able to chat with this creature, I waved my hand and continued along my path. I needed to find the guards.
"Wait!"
I had only walked a few meters when the terrible stamping of the orc sounded behind me, and he ran through me, stopping and turning to face me several steps ahead.
"Where am I? And what is this creature?"
"Actually, I wanted to ask you the same thing," I replied with surprise to the warrior who was pointing at a round monster covered in sores who was crawling along the path beside ours. I figured that the revived warrior could help me figure out how this Erebus worked, as well as its rules, but it looked like the orc didn't know anything himself. "Tell me, what is the last thing you remember?"
"Fire!"
the orc seethed. The warrior's face filled with an internal struggle between his hate of all freemy curs and the thirst to communicate with this strange creature. It was a thirst strong enough to quench the fire of fear before the unknown. And it won the day.
"A freemy fire mage incinerated me and my men. We were garrisoning a village. Then you appeared, this fog and this path. Where am I?"
"Ah, so this isn't just a warrior, but a commander? In that case, his imitator must be fairly advanced to try and fight for survival, if that's even permitted to the local AI. We are in Erebus." At these words, the orc's face once again filled with utter despair and resignation, so I had to think of something to cheer him up.
I came here to retrieve 6 dead souls and return them to Barleona.
If you like, I can take you with me. Will you be able to overcome your loathing of all free citizens? I'm not really sure why I'm even dealing with this fellow. He's an orc. He doesn't like players. He's only a level 120. You could find a dozen orcs like him in any village for the cost of a couple gold pieces. Heck, you could even ask for change. However, there I was, standing before the orc, awaiting his response. As one ancient author once said, "You become responsible forever for what you have tamed, or, in my case, created, or embodied. It doesn't matter."
"You don't seem like the other freemies,"
the orc remarked after some consideration.
"You're different."
"Can I take that as a yes?" I asked. The orc didn't respond, but his eyes turned hazel again, indicating that he had already made his choice, even if he hadn't voiced it. Looks like someone wanted to protect his pride. In order to safeguard myself in the future, I selected the orc and offered him to join my group. What if we had to fight? He'll go berserk and start crushing the enemies left and right, and accidentally nick me in the process. At the moment, we're in different planes of reality, but who knows what awaits us up ahead?
"A dragon?"
The orc's astonished voice resounded throughout Erebus, drawing a smirk from me. "Yep, I'm a dragon. Tremble before me, and all that." For the first time I recall, I actually regretted that this locale didn't allow me to record video. The vivid expression of astonishment on the dark green mug really was picture-worthy. The orc's facial muscles were dancing so rapidly that I was beginning to be afraid his jaw might lock up. "These are all the creatures that once lived and are now dead." I waved my hand in the direction of the path along which the round monster had passed, crawling who knows where. Even if there wasn't anyone there anymore, the orc should have understood whom I meant. "They are following their path to non-being, as you were just now. There's an enormous cliff up ahead, which might not even be a cliff, but an enormous magnet drawing the souls towards itself. That's where we need to go."
"In that case, will we be able to return to Barleona if we head in the other direction?"
the orc asked, confirming my hunch that his imitator really was an advanced version. He wanted to survive. "It's possible, but I can't go find out. First, we have to search. We'll decide how we're going to get out of here later, after we've found everyone I'm looking for. Are you with me, or are you going to go back?"
"Girdum Steelaxe doesn't betray his allies, whoever they may be."
The orc puffed out his chest proudly and directed his gaze in the direction of the fog-covered cliff. If I understood what the NPC was saying, we would be going together after all. I'll remember our journey to the cliff for a long time. Not so much for the terrible sight of monsters and creatures we passed along the way, as for the resignation imprinted on their faces. The ghosts trudged bleakly to their unknown goal, and the closer we got to the cliff, the more worried I became about Gerdum. What if he's sucked into the cliff? Then reviving him would have been in vain. As his creator, I don't want to see my creation destroyed.
"Mayan?"
A familiar voice exclaimed in astonishment, causing the orc to adopt a combat stance. I automatically tried to place my hand on Gerdam's shoulder, intending to calm him, but yet again only encountered thin air. We remained in different planes of reality. "Slate?" I asked cautiously, disbelieving my own ears. Several moments later, a shade appeared in the fog and slowly gained the form of a bear.